Measures to reform healthcare are meandering through Congress, especially in the U.S. Senate. What should we expect, and how will the political process play itself out in the coming weeks? Joining us now on the Bioethics Channel to talk about it are Terry Brooks of Polsinelli Sugar Law Firm in Washington, D.C., and Dr. Max Skidmore of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. You are presenters at a public forum on healthcare reform sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics. Terry, what were the key points you were trying to get across in your presentation?
Primarily that the legislation is working its way through Congress. We're now at the point where the Senate Finance Committee, which is one of the primary committees responsible for the financing and scope of the health reform package in the Senate, is almost completing its work. It's almost ready to vote on a measure. And then the House is already to – it's now starting the process of melding legislation so it can be moving towards the House floor.
Dr. Skidmore, what were you trying to get across with your points tonight?
Well, my points were primarily technical. I gave sort of an updated civics lesson to update.
And we all need that, don't we?
Well, many people not only don't remember what they learned in basic civics classes, but much of what they learn now needs to be updated because the process is far more complex than it was when LBJ shepherded through Medicare through both houses of Congress in 1965. Now a bill goes to multiple committees. The health care bill has gone to five committees, two in the Senate and three in the House. And as Ms. Brooks indicated, they're working to meld together the three House committees and ultimately the two Senate committees into bills that will be, one hopes, accepted on the floor of both houses, and then they have to go to a conference committee.
It seems like things have quieted down since August and, with the congressional break. Does that then, as things start to go into Congress, do people start losing their attention span and get confused over what's being considered at this point and what's not being considered?
I think what's quieted down is cable news and talk shows and shouting in public. I don't think things have quieted down in Congress. I think the momentum is there. It's building. People are working very diligently on both sides of the aisle in both houses. And I don't think that it's correct to say that things are bogged down now. I think they're really moving.
So, Terry, you see then that the process is the action really in the U.S. Senate at this point? It seems like the House is pretty a cut-and-dried situation.
The action really is focused in the Senate. And for the last 2 weeks, it's been almost nonstop in terms of discussions and the markup during the Senate Finance Committee, yes.
What are some of the issues that they're trying to wrestle with within the U.S. Senate?
Within the U.S. Senate, I think indeed we'll see as they try to meld the legislation between the House and the Senate versions, will be the issue of a public option, the idea that there might be a public-sponsored plan that would be available to the individual market in the small group market. The other issues might be things like who's going to pay for it? Will there be an individual mandate? How much will the excise taxes be, if there will be excise taxes? And what is the size of the Medicare changes, the entitlement reforms that will be seen, particularly the expansion of Medicaid substantially?
You two tended to agree on the idea of the public option. Would you say that's fair to say, Dr. Skidmore?
I think so.
Yes.
Why don't you characterize, Dr. Skidmore, how you view that, at least at this point?
Well, the public option is, the word option means, of course, that some people could choose, some people not. The way it's been presented would be a very limited public option, only available to some people, not to people who get their coverage through their employers and all. But it would exist to serve as a choice for people either who were unhappy with their insurance companies or from the standpoint of public policy, it would exist to keep the insurance companies honest, if you will, to help keep them in line, to ensure that they adopt efficiencies and keep costs to the consumer as low as possible, and also serve as good as can be. can be, should be expected.
Now, Terry, you said in the public presentation you didn't care if a public option was passed or not.
I don't think it's necessarily important to healthcare reform that we have a public option. And if it means that we have no reform legislation, then a public option may have to be at least foregone for a period of time. I think we might see the potential for some alternative if the insurance reforms that are promised don't materialize. And therefore, there might have to be some kind of either a trigger mechanism, or if there's a co-op, or some kind of opportunity for the states, indeed, to provide insurance for their population. In fact, there is a provision that was adopted last week that would allow states to decide to waive the requirements for some kind of a public plan, or waive requirements in order to run a program for their individual citizens and provide them basic health care coverage.
Now, when you look at the two words, though, mandate and option, aren't those a little bit contradictory?
Well,
No, those are two different issues.
Everyone, the mandate requires that everyone have insurance.
Right.
But then there are options as to the kind of insurance the person will choose, either public, private, or among a wide range of private plans. And I would agree, too, that the public option isn't absolutely essential for reform, and I certainly would rather have reform without it than not get it. But I do think if we don't have a public option, we have to have, and ultimately would have, tight regulation that far beyond what's being considered now. I think the insurance companies that oppose public option are being short-sighted, because if they don't get a public option, I think they're going to get heavier regulation down the road.
I think that's probably correct.
So that's a trade-off they won't like then.
I don't think they recognize it. I don't think. I think they only see that a public option might be a threat to them, and I think they believe that they will have the political power to prevent any kind of further regulation. But I think the public demand will be such, the public pressures on the budget, the pressures on the public budget will be so much that regulation is going to have to come if there isn't a public option.
We're visiting with Terry Brooks of Polsinelli-Shugart and Dr. Max Skidmore of the University of Missouri-Kansas City. They were presenters at the first of a series of public forums on health reform sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics in October 2009. The next public forum is scheduled for October 13th. For more information on these programs, visit the center's website at practicalbioethics.org. Do we have any real sense today, October 6, 2009, Terry, of what will finally be included in any health care reform package?
If we're talking about health care reform, we're talking about two types of reform. We're talking about entitlement program reform, which is Medicare and Medicaid, and then we're talking about insurance or coverage reform. Indeed, we have a great deal of agreement on the entitlement piece of the reform. The insurance reform, we also recognize that we need coverage for the underinsured and the uninsured. And therefore, I think that there is an agreement that we need to move ahead on that, but it may be something that's going to be incremental over time if we can't reach agreement ultimately.
Dr. Skidmore?
Yeah, I would agree. And there are political factors involved, of course. Bill Kristol famously in 1993 sent a memo to all Republicans in the House and Senate, some of whom had been active in supporting health reform, urging them not to as long as President Clinton was in office, because he certainly wouldn't be reelected. But if health care were passed, he would be. And so then you could move to get health care with a good Republican president. As it turned out, President Clinton was reelected, but the Republicans did take over Congress, and we didn't get health care. A great opportunity was missed. The Clinton plan would have been far better than doing nothing, but it was an extremely cumbersome, complex plan. I read the thing through, and it...
You were one of the few then, probably. Well,
oh, no. I spent a lot of time on those 1,362 pages.
Yeah. Oh, my. Well, the political equations are something we can't avoid, though, right?
No. That's very much a part of the system.
My point is that Bill Kristol has written an op-ed recently, more than one, I think, saying the same thing. And there are Republicans, I think, who intellectually would like to support it, who are facing pressure from their party not to support it. Governor Schwarzenegger came out today in support of it, and the three previous Republican Senate leaders Bob Dole, Howard Baker, and I think those are the three.
Tom Daschle, and probably. Yeah.
Well, he's a Democrat.
But he's
the
a Democrat.
Three previous
right.
Republican leaders.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
Bill Frist have come out. Bill Frist has kind of walked back a little bit from that. But he and Dole and Baker, the three preceding Republican Senate leaders, have come out in favor of it. So it isn't that Republicans as a whole are opposed so much as this small controlling group of congressional Republicans are.
Now, I'm going to give each of you a chance to answer this question. It's a crystal ball question. Let's say it's a year from now, October 6, 2010. Where are we? Where do we stand with health care reform? And, Terry, I'll give you the first shot at it.
If you liked the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, you'll love health care reform in a year. And one of the problems that I see, and I am certainly supportive of health care reform, one of the problems I see is that legislation is so complex with a myriad of new offices and directives, pilot programs, demonstration programs, responsibilities that we've never seen. It's going to be a huge undertaking to see that healthcare reform is actually carried out in the time frame in which they anticipate it should be carried out. So if you liked ARRA, you'll love healthcare reform.
Yeah.
Dr. Skidmore.
Well, I think I think that makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, I tend to be a bit pessimistic, but optimism sometimes creeps in, and I do think there's a possibility. We all know what a complex issue Medicare Part D was, a prescription drug benefit, and how difficult it was to implement. On the other hand, Medicare itself was implemented very smoothly and went off without a hitch. When people are concerned about government and are convinced that government can work and are determined to make it work, they can do it, as LBJ did with Medicare. If President Obama were to bring in someone like James Lee DeWitt, who revolutionized and made a basket case FEMA into a model government agency almost overnight, or Ken Kaiser, MD, who did the same thing for the Veterans Health Administration, making it an institution that provides absolutely world-class care and did it very quickly, I think it can be done. If he were to bring in people like that and put them in charge and give them control and give them not only control but authority to bring in the resources that they need from other agencies. That's not my crystal ball. I'm just saying I think there's a possibility it could be, but the likelihood, the complexities of American politics are such that I'm afraid you're more likely to be on the ball.
Well, we could carry on this discussion for quite a bit longer, but we'll bring this to a close. Terry Brooks is with Pulsinelli Shugart, and Dr. Max Skidmore hails from the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Both were participants in a public forum on healthcare reform, the first of a series in October, sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information on these healthcare reform forums, go to practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. You've been listening to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. I'm your host, Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.